something God. Off like that.
There are some terrifying options. There's some teams that I just like the Ravens and the Chiefs and the Eagles would be at the top of the list of like, please don't do that. Like, don't let that happen. But then like the rest of everybody I'm okay with, I think, for the most part. The Bengals? Would they be more willing to pay Micah Parsons than Trey Hendrickson? You know? The Bills could use some help on the edge.
We joked about that last week. You know, Micah for Trey Hendrickson, who says no? Like, that's like a first-round pick and Trey Hendrickson for Micah Parsons?
Could you imagine Trey Hendrickson showed up and wants a deal compared to Micah Parsons? There's no way
I'm going to give you 15 a year.
But again, I think 31 of 32 teams should be looking for Micah Parsons' services. And we'll, if there is a trade and they can't fix this situation and fix the seemingly broken relationship between the Jones family and Micah Parsons, he could be out of there.
It's a mess.
We're just going to have to watch.
Jerry Jones drives me insane.
Now, he was at practice today, Micah.
Yeah, he was wearing his jersey. Do you see some Cowboys fans are like, he's got his jersey on.
Brian Schottenheimer explained that he told Micah, and I guess Brian Schottenheimer is probably as annoyed as we all are with how this situation has sort of figured itself out. But I think Brian Schottenheimer explained he wanted everybody to look the same, so he told Micah to put his jersey on, and Micah obliged. And that's the other part of this. Micah hasn't held out.
Mm-mm.
He hasn't been outside of your facility walls this entire time. He's trying to, you know, rehab certain injuries, make sure his body's right for the season. He's done everything by the book this entire time. And the Jones family's still acting the way that they are. I can't understand it. I can't understand it.
It's so goofy. It's so stupid.
Hour number two is on the way, and we'll open it up. Talk with David Cobb from CBS Sports. Coach's poll is out. Let's get his reaction on the other side. 92.9 FM, ESPN. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining me now via the phone line is David Cobb from CBS Sports, college football and college basketball for them. Also a role player here at 92.9 ESPN. My show Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then Jeffrey Wright and Company on Thursday on X, David W. Cobb. David, how's it going?
Good, man. We got a college football coaches poll. It's golf tournament week and some great college basketball news. No NCAA tournament expansion for this season. So, pretty busy Monday.
All right. Now, I want to start with the coaches poll. Do you have any, like, inflammatory reactions to it? I know the coaches poll doesn't mean as much as the AP poll, and I don't think the AP poll means as much as it once did with the college football playoff, you know, sort of ruling everything. But do you have any reactions to the way the coaches voted in this poll?
Yeah, I mean, you talked me into Penn State. So, like, when I submitted my ballot for the CBS Sports 136, I had Penn State at one. The coaches have Penn State at three. I have Notre Dame at two. The coaches have Notre Dame at five. And then the two teams that the coaches have atop their poll, Texas 1, Ohio State 2, I have it 3 and 4. So, I mean, I'm not super far off from where the coaches landed. In fact, I have the same top nine that they have. I just have them in a different order. But where I deviate is some of the, like, 12 through 25. I mean, I'm pretty different from the coaches in that region. But, I mean, there's nothing just overly egregious about it. It's I thought Baylor and Utah were snubbed. Like, it's just like the coaches must have looked at the Big 12 and thought, we don't know. And so they didn't really give the Big 12 a fair shake, I thought. But, I mean, other than that, it's fine.
Yeah. Now, week one is shaping up to be pretty nice. If these are the numbers attached to the names, you're going to have 1 versus 2, 6 versus 9, 5 versus 10. I mean, like, And I know, like, with the college football playoff and the expansion to 12, like, it doesn't mean as much if you lose week one as it once did. Still means a little bit. It could have some long-lasting effects as far as how you are viewed. How much do you expect to learn coming out of week one as we get to that Monday and that Tuesday?
Oh, I mean, so much. I mean, it's solid. It's a solid week one slate. Those matchups. There's a handful of others that I think are pretty fantastic as well. know, it's, you know, we're going to learn some. The thing is, like, especially in the case of Texas and Ohio State, they're going to be so far from a finished product. I mean, both of those teams lost so much. They're breaking in new starting quarterbacks. In that game, I don't think you're going to be able to tell the whole story on Texas and Ohio State based off that week one game. In fact, I would even submit that Clemson-LSU might be a better game. It might be a better product because you're talking about Garrett Nussmeier and Cade Klubnik as opposed to a couple of new starters in Arch Manning and Julian Sayin for Texas and Ohio State. So, I mean, we're going to learn a lot. I would say, though, that in the case of Texas and Ohio State, which will be the most highly anticipated matchup of the weekend, you know, what we see there, it won't tell the whole story in a way that some of these other games will.
Yeah, I did bring this up, though, in regards to that game. The 11 a.m. kickoff really does chap my you-know-what. I mean, that bothers the hell out of me. That needs to be a 7 o'clock under the lights, maybe a neutral site game. That needs to feel more important than an 11 a.m. big noon kickoff game, unfortunately.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I don't necessarily love, to me, that growing up gave that noon window was about, oh, it's Vanderbilt and Mississippi State.
Yeah, I'm watching SEC Network at that time. That's what I would hope.
Yeah, but Fox, they had to get out from underneath the ESPN. They tried to prop up that noon to make it into something big, which leaves a little bit lean later on in the day. I mean, LSU Clemson is going to be a heck of a nightcap. They're just not going to be fantastic, like a second and third screen viewing on Saturday night in week one, which you would really hope for. I mean, because if for whatever reason Clemson and LSU doesn't deliver, you know, you're going to need something kind of weird to happen in, like, Michigan and New Mexico or, like, Ole Miss and Georgia State. There's just not a ton of other juice in that evening window, which is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah. The other thing that sort of stuck out to me is I think as long as we've played football in the 21st century, we've done this reductionist thing where we, you know, talk about quarterbacks, and quarterbacks are the main, you know, teller of success. 7 of the top 10 teams in this coaches poll have a new quarterback running out this year. Number 1, number 2, number 4, number 5, number 7, number 8, and number 10. All new quarterbacks rolling out there. And we've had the conversation about, you know, the quarterback position in general in college football, how there's very few incumbents, and we expect a lot from Arch Manning and DJ Lagway and maybe Dante Moore or Gunnar Stockton or Julian Sayin. But I find that to be an interesting part of this college football season. A lot of the teams that we expect to win the national championship are dealing with young, inexperienced quarterbacks.
No doubt. You go even further down the list. You got Michigan most likely going to start Bryce Underwood. They're at number 14 in this poll. Ole Miss going to be starting Austin Simmons. They're at 15 in this poll. So it's the theme of college football in 2025 is the new blood at the quarterback position. And to me, that makes it really interesting, especially in week one, because you're going to get your first look at these guys in a real substantive type of way. We saw Arch Manning against Mississippi State and Louisiana Monroe. Now we're going to see him in the horseshoe against Julian Sayin, who is a former five-star prospect himself. Notre Dame, I have it too. C.J. Carr, grandson of famed Michigan coach Lloyd Carr, going to be making his debut. He's got a rock-solid defense around, great running backs, and an improved receiving core. He's set up for success, but it's right for the moment, right? Those are the big questions that sort of underlies season. And then, I mean, Georgia, right? Like Gunnar Stockton, we saw a little bit of him late last season after the injury to Carson Beck. But he's probably got more questions to answer than anyone because all these other guys were five-star guys. They were showing out at Elite 11 as prospects, can't-miss type of players from the time they were sophomores in high school. And then here we have Gunnar Stockton, a local kid, sort of like a supercharged version of Stetson Bennett. And he's got a lot of questions to answer as well because Georgia did not go out and get a quarterback in the portal. Like, they've obviously got a lot of faith in Gunnar Stockton. I don't know if their fans do, though. I don't know if the general public at large is looking at him in the same way they're looking at Arch Manning and Julian Sayin. So a huge question mark there with Georgia as well.
I think I've played my hand about this question that I'm about to ask to you before. But of these like top 10 teams, these seven quarterbacks that are brand new, and I guess we'll leave Arch Manning out, but let's go. Julian Sain, Gunnar Stockton, C.J. Carr, Dante Moore, Ty Simpson, and Carson Beck can be in this conversation as well, number 10 with Miami. Which one of those guys do you truly have the most confidence in?
Yeah, that's I don't have an easy answer there, honestly, because it's such an unproven crop. I would say I probably have the least confidence in Dante Moore.
Really? Okay, that's my most confidence, weirdly enough. And it's not about Dante Moore's skill set. It's about Will Stein and his history with quarterbacks. Like, he is who we think a lot of these so-called quarterback whispers are. And I brought these stats up off the top, but I'll go ahead and drop them real quick to you so I can see if I can convince you. His first year as an OC and a quarterback coach with UTSA in 2022 before he went to Oregon, he coached Frank Harris. 70% completion percentage, 32 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Senior year for Bo Nix when he was coaching him, when no one thought Bo would be there. 77% completion percentage, 4,500 yards, 45 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. And then his year last year, the best one with Dylan Gabriel, I think that is pretty substantial as well. Near 4,000 yards passing and 71% completion percentage. So, like, maybe Dante Moore needs a little more time to cook, and maybe their wide receiver room's a little in flux. Evan Stewart's going to be out for the year with that patellar tendon injury. But I just have an innate confidence in Will Stein and whoever he runs out there at quarterback.
What you're saying is how I feel about Ty Simpson with Ryan Grubb.
Okay, fair.
Alabama, and with Kalen DeBoer. It's that coach and that system. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you got Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard in a really rock-solid running back. I feel better about Ty Simpson at Alabama than I do about Oregon because of the personnel that is around Ty Simpson at Alabama. Oregon is so near the bottom of the list in terms of returning production. This is a year for Oregon where they need the top five recruiting classes that Dan Lanning has stacked to really pop. This is a year where they prove that not only can they go big game hunt in the portal, but they can really develop internally at a really high rate because to a certain extent, some of the players who they had success with early under Dan Lanning were recruited by Mario Cristobal. And then a lot of the other big-time additions were transfers. Now they're transitioning to a point under Dan Lanning where they're going to be banking on highly touted prospects who haven't really had the opportunity to perform in a big-time, big-pressure sort of way at Oregon. Those guys are going to need to pop. I feel a little better about Alabama. Caden Proctor at left tackle. Think about the receiver talent, the system, the scheme there. A little better about that stuff for Ty Simpson. You got the setup for Dante Moore. And it's also hard, I think, because we did see a little bit of Dante Moore 2 years ago, CLA, under Chip Kelly.
Hey, David, I'm sorry to cut you off. Can we stop this for a second? Your connection's a little strange. Just talk to Connor real quick, and we'll get it all figured out. It's real in and out. So we're gonna fix that connection for you guys out there. But listen, I'm not above reproach when it comes to my Dante Moore crowning. I completely understand that. I get the fact that Dante Moore doesn't have a whole lot around him at this particular moment. When you're looking at pass catchers that are in his corner, a year after Evan Stewart was there and all these different guys, Terrence Ferguson at the tight end position, you really have a lot hinging on a five-star number one wide receiver in DeCorian Moore. But I think there's some other things that do give me some hope. Oh, I think we got David back. But, you know, I'll let you get back to your answer there on Dante Moore. But one thing that still, and I know I'm still trying to convince you on Dante Moore, but DeCorian Moore at number one wide receiver, freshman, I understand that part of it. And I think to a certain extent, I think you're downplaying the supporting cast. I know it's new, but they brought in Isaiah World, who's an NFL draft prospect from Nevada at left tackle. They've rebuilt the offensive line, and I do like the idea of Dante Moore year one having a running back next to him and an offensive line like that, but he has a running back in Mekhi Hughes coming over from Tulane who has proven to be one of the best running backs in college football. So, like, I think that's a help as well.
No doubt. I just – at the end of the day – I have more faith in Alabama's supporting cast than I do in Oregon's. I also think with Oregon, you look at their defense. I don't know, man. Like, I just have some questions there with their defense as well. I understand Dan Lanning is a defensive guru. Like, he's not the guy that you doubt on that side of the ball. I just don't think this is, like, the national championship or bust sort of season for Oregon that you might assume it is because of how good they've been over the last few years. So, you know, I mean, and I'll say this, like, Dante Moore, we did see him 2 years ago at UCLA, and it wasn't great. Like, it was not great, and it's hard to flesh that taste. Like, it's hard for me to erase those memories.
Can you attribute that a little bit, like, use some context alongside Chip Kelly on the way out, not wanting to be a head coach anymore? You had Garbers right behind him who could step in at a moment's notice, and it was a brand new, true freshman at that moment. Like, I think there is some context you can add to that situation to at least – you know, give Dante Moore a brace to the fall that he had then.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. And that's also why I think there needs to be a caveat around what we expect from Bryce Underwood as a true freshman. Because the most recent examples of true freshman starting quarterbacks that we have of that caliber are Dante Moore at UCLA. And then last season, Dylan Raiola at Nebraska. Well, clearly the situation at Michigan is a lot better suited for a freshman to succeed with Bryce Underwood than it was at UCLA for Dante Moore, or even last season for Dylan Raiola at Nebraska. So, you know, there's always going to be nuance or caveats, you know, to those conversations. And I'm not saying that, like, Dante Moore is a bad player. I just don't know that he's the world beater of that group of seven that you've highlighted that are going to be new starting quarterbacks. Like, a couple of them are going to emerge as world beaters. Like, maybe it's Arch Manning. Like, you know, he's probably
Julian Sand can rely on Jeremiah Smith. That's a help.
No doubt. I think you also think about that Will Stein system. It's a lot of underneath stuff. It's kind of set up for a guy like a Dylan Gabriel, for example, or a Bo Nix to succeed. So I think Dante Moore will have solid production and good numbers. Will he be the best quarterback of that group? I've got a lot of questions that I got to get answered before I could say that.
Yeah, and to be fair, I do think the start of the season for Oregon does give Dante Moore a chance before they get to that Penn State game, fifth game of the season. It gives him a chance to get sort of ready to go before he faces the toughest opponents. Montana State, Oklahoma State, Northwestern, Oregon State through the first four games of the year. That should be a nice lead-in. And I think a lot of these quarterbacks, that's something we have to pay attention to. The quarterbacks like Arch Manning who have to open with Ohio State, that's not a fun situation compared to some of these other quarterbacks who are stepping into that role who have a nice little lead-in to the season with FCS teams and otherwise.
Yeah, no, exactly. You think about Ty Simpson, he's got to play his first game at Florida State.
Right.
I mean, that's, say what you will about Florida State, but week one, at least, they're going to be pretty fired up to have Alabama there. Arch Manning's got to go to the horseshoe. I mean, we've seen it. Like, a bad opening game in a hostile environment, I mean, it can wreck your confidence as a quarterback. I'll give you that. Dante Moore almost certainly has the softest opening in that category, but it's going to be fascinating. I think it's the history of college football this year. It's also why I have Penn State at number one, because Drew Aller, which will about the guy. I mean, he's got his limitations, but we've seen it. It's proven, and then we know what's around him. It's an elite defense. It is the best running back tandem in the country. It is a really good offensive line. And so, you know, I kind of went with the proven supporting cast when I was casting my ballot for CBS Sports. And I think Penn State, Notre Dame, they have the best, most proven supporting cast. They felt like the safest bet. Whereas it could go wrong with some of these other programs. I mean, it could take Julian Sain a while to get comfortable. It could take the Texas offensive line, which is reshuffled and wasn't all that great last season, some time to figure it out. So, you know, there's dynamics at play there. I mean, you talk about Isaiah World, who Oregon's bringing in from Nevada at left tackle. I mean, yeah, he was really highly touted as a transfer, but he's bumping up significantly in level of competition. I don't have those same concerns about the offensive line at Notre Dame and Penn State.
Or Bama. You brought up Caden Proctor. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I completely understand that. Now, final thing for David Cobb at David W. Cobb on ex-college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. The NCAA did announce that it was voted upon to expand the NCAA tournament in college basketball, and they said no. But listen, I agree with that decision, and it's surprising the NCAA took a vote and made the right one. But I feel like we, at this point, considering all the noise, and Dan Gavitt, after the vote, said we're still going to vote on this and try to get it figured out before the 2027 season, it still feels like it's delaying the inevitable, right? Like, that's as much as I liked the news that it we're going to stay at 68, it doesn't feel like we're going to stay at 68 for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, basically what's happened here is they've just delayed the inevitable. They kicked the can down the road too far, and at this point, trying to figure out the logistics of expansion for 2026 was going to be too much to handle on a short turnaround, and so they're basically tabling this for future discussion. So we could absolutely still see expansion in 2027, but for now, we have successfully avoided what 95% of college basketball fans do not want to see. I mean, 95% of college basketball fans have no interest in expanding the NCAA tournament. For whatever reason, the commissioners and the coaches are kind of into the idea, some of them anyway. Why you would do that when so many of your customers are against it is beyond me. But unfortunately, we're not done with the conversation. We're just done with it for now.
Yeah. Do you like 72 or 76?
Yeah.
Do you have a preference, David? If those are the two options.
If I were Nico Medved, the head coach at Minnesota, I would love 76 because you know what? I've probably got a $150,000 contract incentive that says if you make the NCAA tournament, you're going to get this massive six-figure bonus. And guess what? It's going to be really hard to make the NCAA tournament if there's only 68 teams. But if you're at Minnesota or Nebraska or let's say Mississippi State or LSU, and you got a contract incentive that says you get paid if you make the tournament, then yeah, you want to expand it because it's, you know, then you can get in, you can go 6-12 in the SEC and make it into the dance if it's at 72 or 76. So I get why the coaches want it. I get why the agents want it. But, man, I sure side with the fans who say, no, leave well enough alone. This is a fantastic – it's one of the best postseason tournaments in all of sports. It's March Madness, man, and it's so available to the casual fan who can pick up a bracket, fill it out, and then just partake in the insanity. You lose a lot of that if people have to navigate the clunkiness of a 76-team bracket when they're filling out the pool. And I don't want us to lose – what makes the tournament special, what makes it appeal to the casual fan. Eventually, I think it's happening, but I'm glad that for now we have avoided what will eventually be a very sad and dispiriting thing whenever expansion goes through. But, you know, for 2026, hey, anyway, it's off the books.
Hey, and thank you for basically naming every power conference school as the beneficiaries of this and not bringing up Indiana State. Or, you know, because, like, I think there's, you know, the way that the NCAA, Dan Gavitt, and Charlie Baker will try to sell it to you is Indiana State and Cinderella's. Get out of here with that. That's not why you expand, and that's not how it would end up. It's basically Ten, the entire SEC, more of the ACC. That's who would be the beneficiary of an expansion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, is it possible that a second A-10 team or a second Missouri Valley team could benefit from this if they were close enough to the bubble? It is possible. But I would say most years, 6, 7, maybe even all 8 of the additional spots would go to power conference teams that finish below 500 in their league. Nobody wants that. That sounds awful. That sounds like a really bad idea. because it would only further dilute what is already, you know, some would say, the most insignificant regular season in sports. Right. It makes no sense. And the thing is too, Gabe, and I'll let you go, but they also have not provided any sort of financial data to suggest that this is really going to be a big time moneymaker for the leagues and for the NCAA itself. And right. At this day and time, I mean, that's the only reason why you would do it is because, well, we got to pay the players now. We need more money. If we expand, here's how many more millions of dollars we can bring in. There is nothing out there that suggests they can bring in millions more dollars by expanding the tournament, which would be the only reason to do it. So until they can prove that or show that or illustrate that they can do that, I think it's really, really senseless.
No doubt. No doubt. You the man, David. I appreciate it. We'll do it again on Wednesday.
All right, man. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. He's David Cobb. College basketball, college football for CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb. Yeah, Connor, with the expansion of the NCAA tournament, in regards to that, I don't want it. I think today we delayed the inevitable. But I still don't understand the allure of it. I don't get it. Fans don't want it. As David just mentioned, there hasn't been a substantive plan as to how this is going to make them more money. That would at least like give you a reason to say, okay, I get why they're doing it. I just don't see a real reason out there at this particular moment as to why they're going this direction and why I feel like it's delaying the inevitable. I don't need this. No one needs this. No one's called for it. Doesn't make you more money. What is the positive? Let's do a pros cons list. The cons certainly outweigh the pros.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants this. 68 feels like the correct number. For the NCAA tournament.
You can think 60. I think a lot of people still think 64 was the correct number.
Sure. I will hear that, but we're not going to go backwards. So, you know, I'm glad that the vote got turned, that they voted to not expand the NCAA tournament, because honestly, it's the argument that they are making about how it's going to help the little guy. It's trickle down economics for yes. the NCAA. Listen,
always the messaging that you get when someone is going to practice.
The spots in the NCAA tournament are going to trickle down to the other conference. It's not just going to benefit the big ones. We promise. You're going to see it. You're going to see it. The little guys are going to be helped by this. Cut to, like David Cobb said, the worst teams in the biggest conferences getting into the NCAA tournament. Yes. Like, it's not going to be there for the little
guys. A team
guys.
That's it's 5 games under 500 in the Big Ten and finished 13th. Cut to that and that team being in.
We've seen this story before. We've seen it before.
Nasty. Nasty. All right, we need to take a trip around the National Football League. We'll do that next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. So it was a great weekend, and I'll explain a little bit more when we get to the Dolphins here in a second, but it was a great weekend for white defensive tackles in the National Football League. Zach Allen, all-pro defensive tackle for the Broncos, signed a 4-year, $102 million deal that includes $69.5 million guaranteed. Zach Allen, among interior defensive linemen in 2024, was first in pressures with 75 and first in tackles for loss with 16. He is one of those guys that goes under the radar that not a lot of people talk about, but he is one of the best at his position. This is money well earned and money well spent for a 27-year-old in the National Football League that is going to continue to produce for the Denver Broncos. So well done on them. Now we'll get to the other white D-tackle that got paid, but I do want to get to Mike McDaniel because his pressers are back. Head coach for the Dolphins, he was asked today how he was doing, and good versus great. Just play the sound, Connor. I don't get it. I don't get it. I guess that's like the ultimate, like...
That is what doom being and gloom. Miami Dolphins head coach
that's
does
what I'm
to your
saying.
Mental health.
I was like, are you really having that death. Bad of a time? Like, is Tyreek Hill making your life that much of a living hell? I can't understand it. It's not a good morning. It's a great morning because we're one day closer to me leaving this earth. Damn. Now, I understand things are bad in this country, and there's some things that you may not agree with, and your team may be struggling, and you don't have high hopes for this year, and you may be fired. I get there's some negative things, but I think life's worth living.
Yeah, his best player did kind of call the rest of the team a bunch of losers, like, yeah, not too long ago, though. So
I guess that may have something to do with it, but also in Dolphins news, The Dolphins extended their defensive tackle, Zach Seiler, to a 3-year extension worth up to $67.75 million, including $44 million guaranteed. He's another defensive tackle that not a lot of people talk about. You know how many sacks he's had the last 2 years, Connor? Off the top of your head? He's had 20 sacks the last 2 years. 10 and 10.
That's a lot.
And a lot of people had no idea about that production because he plays for the Miami Dolphins and they haven't been relevant the past couple of seasons. But he gets a very well-earned extension, and I think it was money well spent by the Dolphins. But he was drafted by another team. Go ahead and hit this. He was part of the Ravens 2018 draft class. And Adam Schefter blew my mind with this stat. The last draft class that Ozzie Newsome had a hand in 2018, has now generated more money in future contracts than any draft class in NFL history. If you'll remember, in the first round, they took Hayden Hurst and Lamar Jackson. Hayden Hurst, $7.25 million per year. Lamar Jackson now at $52 million per year. In the third round, they took Orlando Brown Jr. and Mark Andrews. Orlando Brown Jr. is making $16 million per year. Mark Andrews making $14 million per year. Fourth round, they took Anthony Averett, $4 million per year. In the sixth round, they took Bradley Bozeman, who's a guard for the Chargers, and Deshaun Elliott. Deshaun Elliott, $6.25 million per year. Bradley Bozeman, $6 million per year. And then in the seventh round, they took Zach Seiler, and he didn't work out with the Ravens, but he gets to the Dolphins. It works out. He's now making $22 million per year. And then, worth mentioning, their undrafted free agents that year, Darius Williams and Gus Edwards. Darius Williams makes $10 million per year. Gus Edwards makes $5 million per year. That's a hell of a draft class, and that was the last year of Ozzie Newsome before they moved on to Eric DaCosta. Pretty damn good. Pretty damn impressive. Shedeur Sanders, he hadn't been working out. He's been held out of team drills because of what the team is calling shoulder soreness. Now, listen, this happens a lot with young quarterbacks where they get into the NFL and the workload kind of surprises them. You know, they finally realize, okay, I need to do some prehab, which is beforehand, and then rehab after practice to make sure my shoulder's good for the next day. Throw a lot of balls. But I think this is a bit concerning for Shedeur Sanders. This is a guy who hasn't taken a bunch of first-team reps. This is a guy who's getting, you know, for most of camp until Kenny Pickett went out, it's a guy who's getting the least reps of all the quarterbacks in that room. And if his shoulder's hurt, like, that is something that that front office and that franchise has to take into consideration. So, not good news, but it does not preclude him from starting games this year. And I don't think it precludes him from getting back on the field in a couple of days. He just has shoulder soreness. We'll move on. But am I right for that, Connor? I think this is just a tad bit strange for a guy who basically is listed as a fourth-string quarterback right now for the Cleveland Browns and gets the least reps in practice to have shoulder soreness, and the rest of the guys are all good with their arms.
It's something to keep an eye on, for sure. Ultimately, he'll probably be fine, and I still think that he deserves a spot on the roster over a guy like Dylan Gabriel. Just that still doesn't make much sense to me, but it's something to keep an eye on, at least.
Yep, no doubt. Now, I need to tell you about Old Dominic. I know it's a Monday, but a bottle of Old Dominic, and stopping by Old Dominic, never a bad time to do that. Make sure you go stop by their state-of-the-art distillery. They have events all the time. You can check them out at olddominic.com. But I can tell you, just about every Saturday for the rest of summer, especially for the rest of August, they're going to have live music from 6 to 9 p.m. So make sure you go check that out. Some in-house events on August 21st. They're going to have trivia at the main bar. They celebrate Elvis Week over there, so they have a bunch of specials. But if you're not just showing up for an event, if you're just out on the town on the weekend, stop by. Get a cocktail made at the bar at Old Dominic. I promise you it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. 305 South Front Street, that is where you can find them. Also, make sure you book a tour and tasting at olddominic.com. Ship their spirits anywhere, and they have tons of spirits. Gin, vodka, toddy, whiskey, bourbon. They have a new premium vodka. They have award-winning selections of that whiskey and bourbon. They have multiple selections of the whiskey and bourbon, so get the bottle of your choice. Go find it for yourself. But Old Dominic wants me to tell you to come by and say hi. Now let's go ahead and get into small talk on the other side, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, a reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, today, we go to the Georgia Senate race upcoming in 2026. We have another announcement. Not only is Tommy Tuberville in office as a senator, former college football coach, Derek Dooley, former Tennessee coach, is trying his hand in the Senate, the U.S. Senate. Derek Dooley announced today that he will run for the U.S. Senate in Georgia. He's got support from Georgia Governor Brian Kemp. He's trying to take down the incumbent Democratic Senator John Ossoff. Of course, Derek Dooley is son of legendary College Football Hall of Famer and former Georgia coach and Georgia Athletic Director Vince Dooley. But here is a bit of what Derek Dooley had to say in his two-minute launch video. Professional politicians like John Ossoff are the problem, and I think I need to do the Derek Dooley voice for this one. Lawlessness, open season on the border, inflation everywhere, woke stuff, that's what they represent. We need new leadership in Georgia. That's why I'm running for Senate. That's what Derek Dooley had to say. I'm glad he was very specific about woke stuff. That's what they need to stop. That's why he's running. Just woke stuff. I'm tired of that woke stuff. The more I keep seeing this, the more I keep seeing like former college football coaches, administration, like heading to U.S. Senate and trying to run for office, the more I sit here and I'm like, they're all Republicans. Like, what? Like, do we have any like former Democratic coaches that want to step in and try to, you know, test their hand and as a public servant, as a senator or somebody in the House of Representatives? They're all sort of built in the same vein here. Derek Dooley and Tommy Tuberville, it feels like their approach is very similar here. But Derek Dooley running for office against John Ossoff in Georgia.
Listen, as a Tennessee football fan, if there is anyone that is not qualified to stop people from going across a line, it is Derek freaking Dooley. All right? I watch this man destroy Tennessee football. And almost, I was at the Troy game where he almost lost. And if it wasn't for Cordarrelle Patterson, he probably would have lost that game. Let me tell you this. Derek Dooley ain't stopping nobody from coming in this country. I can tell you that for damn sure. All right? I was also really happy that when they asked him, what do you want to do to help America? He was like, I want to do stuff.
I want to end the woke stuff.
I
want to
do stuff.
The woke stuff.
Listen, man. Wear those checkerboard pants and just go find a sideline to stand on somewhere, because you're not going to help. I can tell you that.
Oh my gosh, man. Oh,
I cannot.
I know.
I'm
not
so bad.
I'm not trying to, you know, make this a massive thing, but because he's passed away, the legendary Vince Dooley. I wonder what his dad would think about him running for public office. I really do. I really do. I'm sorry that my mind goes there. But that's
when was the last time tough. He had an actual football job?
Oh gosh, this is a good question. I remember he was Barry Odom's first choice as OC at Mizzou, and it turned out to be a horrible decision.
no way.
And then he brought in Josh Heupel. Good decision.
Let's see.
After Derek Dooley was relieved. But that's the last time I remember him being like in that OC.
So here's his he was Tennessee head coach from 2010 to 2012, and he had a 15-21 record. Then he was with the Cowboys as a wide receivers coach. He was at Missouri, the New York Giants in 2020. Then he was the Giants.
What was his role with the Giants?
He was a senior offensive assistant in 2020.
So
then
analyst.
Then he was a tight ends coach in 2021, and then from 2022 to 2023, he was a senior offensive analyst at Alabama. So basically, just stay away from the football. Yes, we're going to put you – don't actually talk to the players.
So he went into the Alabama rehab facility.
I suppose so.
Coach rehab facility, and he's one of like – he's probably one of one that actually didn't come out of the rehab facility.
He failed rehab. He failed the rehab facility at Alabama.
So when you suck as a coach and you can't make it back to the top of that profession, you, I think that's the idea now. If you're a former SEC coach that can't make it back to the top, you pivot to the U.S. Senate. We live in a, I'm sorry, we live in a just very dumb society. What in the hell are we doing?
Derek Dooley should not be in charge of anything. Anything. I
he can't run a football program, much less his, also, whatever his district
why
is.
Why is he worried about the border in Georgia?
I don't know. And then, like, I'm telling you, my favorite thing.
Does he know where Georgia is on a map?
My favorite thing, well, he lives there, I'd hope. My favorite thing is he says woke stuff. No specifics. Not like pronouns. Like, didn't bring up any of that. Woke stuff. I'm trying to end woke stuff.
Do you think he's going to wear that, checkerboard pants on the election trail?
I don't know.
Here's good why God. J.R. Dooley shouldn't get this job. In the piece about J.R. Dooley,
here's why.
Talks about,
okay, there's more than
another,
one reason,
reason
why, but
it
go
talks
ahead.
About his father more than it talks about him.
Yeah, that's why. That's what I'm saying.
His dad from the grave would do a better job than J.R. Dooley would.
You know, I'm not going to act like I know Vince's politics. Vince was a very successful person. Derek?
Not so much.
That's nepotism in its highest degree.
I will never forget that Troy game.
What was the final score? It was
like 50
very
points
close
to beat Troy. Way too close. Way too close. Troy, I think, had like 45 points or something. It was crazy.
So shout out Cordarrelle Patterson for that.
Thank God. God, the guy was electric. Tyler Bray, too.
There's been a lot surfacing on social media. It's funny that you bring up his name. There's a lot surfacing on social media about Cordarrelle Patterson and how his career turned out versus where he was drafted. I would have drafted him, looking at like who he was in his film, 1 overall. Like, seriously, he's 6'4", runs a 4.3, changes direction with the best of them, can play wide receiver or running back. Like, I would have drafted him unreasonably high when he came out of Tennessee. Just a thought that I wanted to
he was
squeak out
a
here.
Fantasy football god for like just
a couple
little,
of years.
Like a couple of years, because he was one of those guys that you could play at like different positions, and
when he and
you
was
could like sneak him in
well,
as a running back.
I'm saying he was utility guy, running back, wide receiver, yeah. And there was a moment in time, it was like 3 years ago, where he was playing running back full time for the Atlanta Falcons, basically.
Dude, yeah, okay.
And he was catching passes on a consistent basis and getting 15 to 20 carries per game.
I found the game. Derek Dooley gave up 48 points to Troy. It was 55 to 48.
Well, he's an OC, but he was the head coach.
It was the homecoming game.
Wasn't easy. Not easy.
You gave up 48 points in your homecoming game to Troy.
Well done. Now he's running for Senate. Hour number three is on the way, and we're going to talk some college football when we return with Colton Denning, my guy from go to youtube.com/Colton Denning to check out all of his work, but he is from Two Stripes CPD. Need to go subscribe, but we'll talk to him next.